For a while, we had been seeing the high beta names, the producers performing first, but the developers who had a high CapEx hurdle, high interest rates. Some companies might have had a 50 mil market cap and had to raise $1 billion. It's a pretty tough ask for some. But seeing the explorers getting attention, and then the high beta producers, that can change over time. So.
Stuart McCliver, Ambest Capital, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, Andy. I'm good. Yourself?
I'm doing really well. Just to talking to all my viewers and listeners here, I met Stuart here in Atlanta. He's based out of New York, and we met and had coffee, and we talked about my favorite subject, natural resource stocks. Stuart is a partner in a natural resource stock fund. I hope I said all of that correct,
Yeah,
Stuart.
all good.
Excellent. So really, commodities have been ripping. The stocks that we look at have also been ripping. Tell me exactly where your view is. Where are we at in this cycle with everything up dramatically? Give me your 30,000-foot view on everything.
I think after a tough 10 plus years in the, mining sector, that, we're finally at the innings of what I hope to be, multi-year, multi-commodity cycle. And, we've been seeing it in gold and silver. And, for a while, the gold price had outperformed the GDX, GDXJ. But in the last like 2 months, those indices caught back up to kind of match the performance of the underlying commodity. But what we're hopeful is seeing that transition into other commodities. And people might have had gains in gold and silver, or gold and then now silver, and perhaps looking next to say copper, and versus some other commodities as well. And then the exciting thing, the thing we're excited about, is some of the more strategic critical minerals, which are coming from a very low tonnage base, such as titanium, antimony, tomato, and rare earth, etc., and being used in new applications that they weren't 10, 15, 20 years ago. So there's a kind of a new demand aspect for some of those minerals that wasn't there in the last cycle, which was mainly driven by, China growth 20 years ago.
Got it. So, on that, I really, with everything up significantly, I'm really s struggling to find value, if you would. And what I mean by value, I believe, and this is my own personal belief, not ad investment advice, obviously, but I see this continuing significantly. But it's right now with everything up, I'm afraid, if you would, because it seems like everybody's jumping in, and it's hard for me to really find value in a lot of different things. What is your opinion on that?
Yeah, I think precious metal names have run quite significantly in the last few months. So perhaps there might be a breather as people, take profits or reset. But we're still finding value in specific names with companies that have good projects, good people running them, and they can be found. And it depends on the stock exchange you're looking at as well. Sometimes there's a hidden Canadian junior that no one kind of has heard of, and same in Australia, but that those things are out there.
Got it. So let's talk about that. What do you do when you're, what's your process in evaluating a company to invest in? Do you look at market cap? Do you look at the asset? Do you look at the management team? Do you look at the jurisdiction? All of the above? Or yeah, how do you go about evaluating a company?
Yeah, lots of risk factors. So it's not just, a below ground risk, geology, metallurgy, a lot of above ground risks like the location of the project, infrastructure, the community in the area, availability of workforce. Geopolitics is a big issue now, particularly seeing a bifurcation of the functioning West and the East. And then, also seeing where in the cycle what names are working with their duration to cash flow. For a while we had been seeing the high beta names, the producers performing first, and then and but the developers who had a high CapEx hurdle, high interest rates, some companies might have had a 50 mil market cap and had to raise $1 billion. It's a pretty tough ask for some. But seeing the explorers doing getting attention, and then the high beta producers, that can change over time. So factoring in what we're seeing is working at that, and then adjusting what we view as balance from our end.
Got it. What, and I don't want to say advice, but what could you give our listeners, if you would, that are just starting in this journey, if you would? What could you give them as far as what would you do in their shoes, if you would? Again, I want to make sure that's not advice, but yes.
Just learn as much as you can and absorb as much information out there. The investable universe for mining companies is something like 10,000, 12,000 public names globally, and there's a lot of companies to filter through, so it's easy to get overwhelmed, but just figuring out what is, what you perceive as good versus, not the best opportunity, and then just trying to learn as much as you can. I actually went back to school to study geology post grad because I realized I didn't know enough about the science in the sector.
Got it. Talk a little bit about the difference between the Australian companies, because you're originally, to all my viewers and listeners, Stuart lives in New York, but he's originally from Australia, and really the eastern part of Australia, correct me if I'm wrong, in the Perth area, correct?
Perth area, but on the West Coast.
On the west. Oh, pardon me, yes. Yeah,
Perth.
and that is really the on that side of the world, that is the place to be for mining, correct?
Yeah, I view Perth, Australia, and Vancouver, Canada, very similar in many respects, both in the southwest of the countries. But a lot of the world's mining companies are headquartered in those two cities, but the projects could be anywhere in the world. But the piece of personnel there, I kind of phrase it as like the Silicon Valley of mining are those two cities. Probably third would be London, and then Toronto and is very similar to Sydney and Melbourne combined. The bigger firms are out on the East Coast, and so I kind of grew up in the sector and lived and breathed it. It's working in Perth, half the, if you're in services business, half the clients are mining companies. So it's easy to
It's easy to get networked.
correct, exactly. And so
Yeah.
I think, there's plenty of similarities between the two and plenty of differences. I think some jurisdictions favor better for different stock exchanges. For example, I think projects in South America are probably better suited to being a Canadian company versus African companies are pretty, a lot more comfortable, say, Australian investors or people from the UK. And I kind of see those geographies break up a bit, but that's not, the be all and end all rule. Things can change over time.
Got it. So one of the biggest to come for me is in this kind of I want to get educated, and I want your opinion on this about the Australian companies. I just don't have the experience that I'd like as I deal with the companies based out of Vancouver or Canada or here in the US. And probably the biggest difference I see is so many shares that are issued in Australia. Help me through that. Why is that the case in Australia? And is that an issue, if you would?
Funny, just growing up there, it's people talk about tight capital structure, and it's just a different mentality. Whereas I think probably from the US being very focused on price per share, like some to go on the NASDAQ, I think it's like minimum $5, and they drop you off if you're below $1 a share. And I think people in Australia just view it as the what is the market cap of the company's shares times price, so they don't worry about it so much, but. It's definitely a big difference between the two jurisdictions.
Yeah. Do you find it, is it harder to move a stock price, an Australian listed company or an Australian company that's listed on the Australian Stock Exchange, because there are so many shares outstanding, is it harder to move that price as opposed to a Canadian or a US company?
Yeah, particularly if that means there's a lower free float in the smaller share outstanding Canadian company. But then there's that, I think culturally there's a subset of investors in Australia who like those small increment stocks. It's because, you know, there's an argument it's easier to go from 0.5 cent to 1 cent than from $1 to $2. But, you know,
Right.
so.
Talk to me about, is it easier to raise money in Australia in the capital markets or in Vancouver or the US for a company?
I think historically Canada was easier because the US was next door, and for the Canadian companies, it's the same, they're in the same time zone, or either Pacific or East Coast, and it's much easier to access the US investors versus a 12-hour time difference to Perth and having to fly halfway across the world. But you know, this year I've seen the TSX retail, I think it's improved since January, but the previous few years, a lot of that had dried up for, you know, cannabis deals in Canada, crypto deals in Canada, blockchain, etc. But those types of companies never really, you know, moved the needle in Australia. They're probably from what, a dozen, a handful of cannabis names on the ASX in that era versus probably 100, 200 in Canada. So that moved a lot of money from retail Canadian, looking at mining sector, to other sectors. So Australia was kind of a bit more buoyant, and then, you know, made a lot of money locally. But I think culturally, both retail investors in both countries culturally like picking their own stocks, and then also have an affiliation with the mining sector and are comfortable with the junior miners as well.
Got it. So obviously, you're very comfortable buying Australian companies listed on the Australian exchange or Canadian or American companies listed on here in the US on the over the counter or in Canada. It's really doesn't make a whole lot of difference to you, correct?
Correct. Now we just look at kind of globally and what are the best projects or, you know, undervalued opportunities we see out there, regardless of exchange. But the exchange can make a difference in what we think might, you know, be better, depending on where the project's located. You know, I think there's one or two ASX companies in Mexico versus however many Canadian companies in the hundreds.
Right.
So I think, you know, it depends. But then on the flip side, it could be scarcity value. Like there aren't many, historically, there aren't many silver companies listed on the ASX. And now the half a dozen, 10 silver companies in the ASX are doing quite well because for an Australian investor who just buys ASX stocks, there's not many options to choose. So they're all flocking to a smaller number of names.
Got it. Do you see a benefit for Australian companies to list on here in the US on the over-the-counter markets and the TSX? And do you vice versa? Do you see a huge benefit for American companies or Canadian companies to list on the Australian exchange?
There were quite a few forgotten, undervalued TSX Canadian companies that did go down to Australia and do a dual listing. And, you know, I think it worked for some, it didn't work for others. But a lot of it just depends on, I think, does that commodity or the jurisdiction the product is in suit that exchange? But also, how often are you going to market to that market? So if you're a Canadian-based management team, you're gonna have to fly down to Australia, you know, 3 times a year to roadshow. That can be, you know, expensive, time-consuming. So it depends on the connectivity and the network of the people running the company. I think if their network was in North America, probably best suited up there, and vice versa down Australia. But I think to getting and to be on the TSX and the ASX, similar from what I understand in cost profile, it's not, you know, for some companies that's double their listing costs. That can be a big additional overhead. But for some companies it's worth it. I've definitely seen some successes. I think getting a US ticker is a much lower threshold to get on there, and can be, easier to service, remotely, and particularly if companies are coming through the US a couple of times a year.
Got it. Let's pivot back to again your process here. Is there companies with a certain market cap that you're not interested in, whether that's very low or too high for you, if you would? Or are you just, is that out the window and you're just looking for undervalued companies and undervalued assets?
Yeah, we do have a mix. We have, exposure to, small 10 million up to 10 billion. A lot of it's getting names in the certain, duration of the asset. So, wanting to have exposure to producers or high beta names, some developers and some explorers as well. But that composition within those three categories can change as the market dictates, or depending on the company's specific reality.
Got it. Now, going back to this cycle, again, you said you're, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you alluded to that you're particularly interested in rare earths. Do you see, and critical minerals, do you see that trend continuing here for how long would you say?
Hard to say, but the stats I will allude to is a benchmark for the rare earth critical mineral sector. It's the VanEck REMX ETF. That was down 26% in 2022. It was down 17% in 2023. Last year, it was down 37%, and it continued its slide till mid-April, and then it's bounced back. So that's like 3.5 years of real pain in that sector. So our view is coming off a very low base, but it's been good to see, particularly in the US, the general media and awareness around where things come from, and that these minerals have been kind of controlled in the Chinese supply chain over the last 10, 20 plus years. And perhaps, some things need to change as the functioning West shores up its supply chain. But the kind of news we've been seeing in the US has really been around the US-focused projects like, Mining California, which the DoD partnered with, and then, some talk about Greenland as well. But there are, a lot of exposure of rare earths in other countries. Like Australia has the world's largest rare earth mine outside of China, produces, I don't know, just under 10% of the world's rare earths. And then Brazil's becoming a really interesting jurisdiction for rare earths. There's a lot of good rare earth projects there.
Yeah, are these jurisdictions, what's the permitting like, and how friendly are they to developing these projects, those jurisdictions?
Brazil's actually pretty good. I mean, Brazil, Australia, Canada, historically large, mining countries. Brazil's one of the biggest producers of iron ore globally. And I was down in Brazil end of 2023, seeing rare earth project and some lithium operations as well. And it was really interesting to see the permitting update, and some of these provinces really do want the jobs and the growth in the mines to be there. And so there was an update in the rule that when I was there, that any land that had been disturbed by humans, so for farming or real estate, could then have a faster permitting process timeline, which I think was quite, positive. Australia has had a mixed history of permitting lately. Some people have argued it's come, back in the, in its permitting ways, and come down in terms of a better place to invest, but still has a long history of mining and permitting. And Western Australia is a massive commodity state for Australia, and continues to be in many commodities, gold and iron ore primarily, but all pretty much has all minerals. And so there still is a good process for permitting there.
Got it. And you don't have to answer this, but I want to ask the question anyways. Is there a jurisdiction that you are not interested in and you won't touch? And if you want to answer that, in a way that's
We probably
yeah.
wouldn't do anything in countries where there's US sanctions.
Yeah, you can answer it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, got it. So, lastly, and we'll finish with this. What do you see really? What should investors be aware in the market, just the general market, whether that's gold, silver, whether that's uranium and energy, or whether that's critical minerals or rare earths? What should investors be aware of from now, really, until the end of the year for this new quarter, for the fourth quarter?
Well, it's depending on the commodity. I think some of them looking at the global comps as well, not getting focused on one company just because it's the only one listed in on the Nasdaq, for example, that there might be plenty of opportunities in that commodity and other stock exchanges, and seeing how that stacks up against them. And I think for some of these commodities, they're coming off a very low tonnage base with either new demands from new applications, technology, defense, robotics, AI, etc., and or the free call option of any government intervention would just be a positive externality for that, which we've been seeing in the US. The US has kind of been at the forefront of throwing money at projects to secure that supply chain.
Got it. All right. Well, Luke, if people want to know more about you and what you do, if they want to reach out to you, how can they do that?
Yeah, great. I would just go to ambassadorsheraton.com and you can find more info on us there and what we do, and reach out that way.
Excellent. Luke, well, thanks so much for your time. I'd love to have you on again soon and talk about our favorite subject.
Right. Thanks, Andy.
You bet.
Cheers.
Cheers.